Translation. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who are the personified teachings of Lord Chaitanya. You are the deliverer of the fallen souls. You do not tolerate any statement which is against the teachings of devotional service enunciated by Srila Rupa Goswami. Please repeat after me. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Who are the personified teachings of Lord Chaitanya? You are the deliverer of the fallen souls. You do not tolerate any statement which is against the teachings of devotional service enunciated by Srila Rupa Goswami. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasna Bhadlesh Madhi Radna Swami Namane. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasna Bhadlesh Madhi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namane. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pachani Nivishesha Shanyavadi Pachani. So, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is not an ordinary person. That's the first thing that we can say. He's definitely not an ordinary person. In fact, he was prayed for by his father, Bhakti Vinod Thakur. He wanted a ray of Vishnu to come and help him in his mission. Because he was on his own, just one person. He was also engaged in service, government service, and he felt that he needed help from a divine source. So he prayed for Lord Krishna to send somebody to help him. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur already had 3 sons. Maybe he had some daughters as well. Altogether, I think he had 11 children, something like that. So when the 4th son was born in February of 1874, which is, I think, 146 years ago, about, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very happy. And the Rath Yatra occurred 4 months after that. Usually it's in June, I believe. I think it's always in June. And the Rath Yatra, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was living very close to the route, the Grand Avenue, where the Jagannath cart, Rath Yatra cart, passes. So the Rath Yatra started, and then the cart stopped outside his house. So I think it was for 3 days or something like that, was it? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the magistrate of Puri, very eminent person. So he persuaded his wife, Bhagavati Devi, to take the newborn child and put him on the cart. So at that time, one thing I didn't mention was that when he was born, the umbilical cord was bound around his body, just like a Brahmin thread. So that was a very auspicious sign. And also, a great astrologer had seen so many auspicious signs on the body of the child. I think he said 32 auspicious signs. So when his mother, Bhagavati Devi, she placed the child on the cart, a garland from Lord Jagannath fell down around the body of the child. And I think it's also said somewhere that the child also, even though he was only like 4 months old, he reached out and touched the feet of the deities. So therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur became very encouraged, thinking, yes, Lord Krishna has answered my prayers. He has sent that ray of Vishnu that I was hoping for to fulfill the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Just very briefly, a few points about his childhood. That he learnt every verse of the Bhagavad Gita by the age of 7. And not only did he learn every verse, but he could explain every verse very wonderfully as well. It wasn't just repeating parrot fashion, like I do, for instance. I can repeat some of the Bhagavad Gita parrot fashion, but as for explaining it, is another matter. To really understand it is another question. Also, we know that famous episode when Bhaktivinoda Thakur brought some fruits and the young Bimal Prasad. Yeah, he was called Bimal Prasad because Bimala Devi always receives the Prasad from Lord Jagannath first. And I think the story was that he was offered to Bimala Devi, the child, when he was born. So therefore he was called Bimala Prasad. So when Bhaktivinoda Thakur brought some fruits in to the house, then the young child, he took a mango and said, "That is mine." And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, well, some accounts say he mildly chastised him. He says, "Oh, you can't take, you has to be offered to Krishna first." And so he then felt, "Oh, I'm an offender. I've taken what is meant for Krishna." So then he vowed at the age of, I don't know what the age he was there, 3, 4, 5, something like that. He vowed, "I will never take mango again," and he never did in his whole life. And Srila Prabhupada, he says when he would be offered mango sometimes by his devotees, by his disciples, but he said, no, "I'm an offender, I cannot take," like that. So he had what they call an eidetic memory. That's like a photographic memory. He could, whatever he read, whatever book he read, he would remember everything, every page of that book, and could recall it instantaneously, even 50 years later. That was how great his memory was. So therefore he very quickly became very erudite, and of course, as we know, he took up astrology, and he didn't take it up just for predictions. It wasn't so much for predictive purposes. It was more because it actually is a science of the movement of the planets, etc., and from that you can know when certain auspicious events occur exactly, because it's all within the astrology. I don't personally know much at all about astrology, so I can't tell you much. But he was so intelligent at it that actually, by the age of 15, he'd written this book, Surya Siddhanta. And apparently, every now and then in astrology, all the calculations need to be updated, because there are some, over the period of time, there's some differences occur. Just like, you know, we have to have a Purushottam mass, like last year, I think, there was Purushottam mass. So that's to adjust for things, because there are things that are slightly out of sync. So therefore, he actually did that. And he adjusted things, and he wrote this book. So therefore, he was given by two very eminent astrologers the title of Siddhanta Saraswati. At this point, it was not Bhakti Siddhanta, just Siddhanta Saraswati. So he was given that title. And he actually started a school of astrology, which he maintained for some time. But he also went to Sanskrit school, but he wasn't so much interested in the lessons or the homework that he was given to do by the teachers. Rather, he would go in the library and he would read every single book in the library. And of course, with this eidetic memory, photographic memory, he soon knew the whole library. And even though he neglected his studies, actually he did very well in his examinations. So he didn't need to worry so much about it. So let's turn to some of the... Well, first of all, I'm going to actually just give you a rundown on some of the main events of his life, and then we'll get into actually his how he departed this world. So in 1881, that was when he was 7 years old, he was initiated by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur into worship of a Kurma Shila. They were, I think, excavating some land in order to build a property. And they came across this Kurma Shila. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave it to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and Bimal Prasad, and gave him a Nrisingha mantra to recite. And this signified his entry into, formal entry into Vaishnavism. And he also formed what's called a Chira Kumara Sabha, the August Assembly. And one of the main points of this August Assembly, all the members were supposed to keep celibacy strictly. And the idea was that they would be celibate for life, because that's what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that was his goal. He had no interest in being married. But he was actually the only one who actually kept this vow that they made in this August Assembly. In 1892, he entered Sanskrit College in Calcutta, but then he quit college in 1895. One reason why he quit was because he didn't want to become too eligible. He wanted to be thought of as a fool, so that nobody would be interested in marrying him, or no families would have their eye on him and try to get him married to their daughter. After he quit college, because he was already an eminent astrologer, he was actually employed by the kings of Tripura, which was actually a Vaishnav kingdom, and actually for 10 years, between 1895 and 1905, he served in the court. Sometimes he was actually bringing up the princes, educating the princes, and also doing other administrative work, especially trying to root out some corruption that was in the court. But eventually, he actually became tired of this, because it seemed like members of the court or the administration were not so keen to be rectified. After that, in 1897, he established the Saraswat Chatuspati, an academy of astronomy. And also he began observing Chaturmasya very strictly. So this meant, this is what he did anyway, no shaving of the beard or cutting of nails. And then just eating a little boiled rice with no spices, and maybe a little salt, but probably not even that. And then it would be put on the floor, and then he would just eat it. The idea is like a cow. Just eat it just by bending down like that. And actually, you're not allowed, following in the way that he did anyway, not allowed to come back up and then, you know, take a rest. And you have to just eat whatever you can in one go, like that. And only once a day, like that. And also lying on the bare ground to sleep with no pillow and no covering. But actually his health suffered from this. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he said it's not necessary. You don't need to do that. Because he was more concerned that he fulfilled a mission, not that he pursue such severe austerities. In early 1900, he was initiated by Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. And of course it took a while for him to persuade Gorkas. He was advised by Bhaktivinoda Thakur that he should take initiation from Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. And of course, we've heard the story that Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, he says, I don't accept disciples. But he insisted, Bhakti Siddhanta, Bimal Prasad, he insisted, and he says, okay, I'll ask Mahaprabhu. And so after a few days, they met again, and he said, did you ask Mahaprabhu? He says, oh, no, I forgot. So then he again asked him, please, will you ask him? Ask Mahaprabhu. And then, so he came back again, a few days later, sometime later, and he said, did you ask Mahaprabhu? Yes, I asked, but he didn't give me any answer. Jai Sri Sri Radha Gokula Nanda Sri Sri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Sri Sri Gornitai Ulapurisa Charis Natula Prabhupada Ki Jai. Yeah, he didn't give me any answer. Now, according to Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, of course, the story goes that he threatened to end his life if he did not actually get the mercy of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. But according to Bhakti Vikash Maharaj, it's not exactly like that. He was... Where's the... what he did was, he actually quoted from one of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's... from one of his songs, which is quite a well-known song, Gurudev. Which is, of course, Gurudev is all about getting the mercy of the spiritual master. Here we are, yeah. So the last verse goes like this. Yogyata vichare kichu nahi pai tomara karuna sara. Karuna na hoile kandiya kandiya prana na rakibo ara. When I examine myself, I find nothing of value. Your mercy is therefore essential to me. If you are not merciful, I will constantly weep and I will not maintain my life any longer. So he said that, prana na rakibo ara. I will not maintain my life any longer. So he wasn't actually threatening to drown himself in the Ganga or anything like that, but he was just expressing his deep felt desire for the mercy of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. So eventually Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, he relented and gave him initiation. And he was his only disciple, although actually in this biography, it does say there was one other disciple, possibly. just a few other notable episodes. Between 1905 and 1914, he undertook Shata Koti Nama Yajna, the great vow to chant at least 3 lakh names, 192 daily, until 1 billion names were completed. So, 192 rounds a day doesn't leave too much time for much else. But actually, he did do other things as well during that time. Apparently, I'm not sure exactly what, but according to this book, he did. In 1906. He initiated his first disciples. I don't know much more about that, but that's what it says here in this chronology. In 1911, he addressed an extensive gathering on the issue of Brahminical eligibility. This was the occasion when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was sick. He was due to go to address this meeting, and it was mainly of caste Goswamis. The story goes that he started off, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur started off by praising the Brahmanas. So all these caste Goswamis, they were very pleased. Oh, he's on our side. Because they were trying to maintain their position. And of course, basically, they were saying that you have to be born into a Brahmana family in order to be a Brahmana. So then, after praising them for quite some time, and of course, he could quote verses from all the Vedas like a flowing river, basically. So he lots and lots of verses he could. Then he started quoting the verses, saying that actually, it's by quality that one becomes a Brahmana and not by birth. So this is very important. And it was his first major public speaking triumph. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very pleased because he'd actually said, is there no one, when he was sick and he couldn't go, he said, is there no one in this land who can go and defend the truth? And then, of course, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur volunteered and he went. Again, later in 1911, he also successfully addressed a public meeting, this time proving that actually Lord Chaitanya was God, because there were some Brahmanas saying that he was just actually a great devotee. He never claimed to be God, so he was just a devotee. So he again, by quoting so many scriptures, he again proved that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is actually the Lord. And also, not only that, but that the Gaura mantras are eternal. There was one occasion in 1912 when he fasted for 4 days at Kashim Bazaar, Samilani, which was another meeting actually. And because he was not impressed by the organizers of this meeting, he refused to take any prasad during that whole time. In 1913, he rented a large house in Calcutta. It doesn't say here if that was Ultradanga Junction, which is now in the possession of ISKCON, and being renovated, I believe. But it could well be that. So in 1914, the Tirubhava of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur took place. So he lost his... Because he felt actually that he was really... Bhaktivinoda Thakur was really his spiritual inspiration, as well as Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj in different ways. And then, so in December of that year, he inaugurated the Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur Pushpa Samadhi at Godruma, which some of you may have visited. okay, so let's see. This is actually 4.5 pages of the list of all his accomplishments and things, so I can't go through everything there. But towards the end of his life, of course, in 1922 was the time when he first, when asked Srila Prabhupada, Abhay Babu, as he was known, to the Gaudiya Math, was persuaded by his friend Narendranath Mullick to visit Ultradanga Junction. Of course, he was reluctant at first because he had so much experience of so-called sadhus coming to his family's house. So he was reluctant. He says, no, I've met so many sadhus. Narendranath, he persuaded him. He says, yes, you must come. This one is different. So he reluctantly went along. And of course, we know the story that Srila Prabhupada paid his obeisances. And as he was rising up, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, you are intelligent young men. You should preach this message of Lord Chaitanya in the English language or to the English-speaking world. Of course, Prabhupada argued. Abhay Babu, he argued in because he was an adherent of Gandhi's independence movement. He says, "We're a dependent country. Who's going to take any notice of us until we get independence?" And of course, he was smashed by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, saying, "No, this nothing is as important as the movement of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and therefore, all political, social, other movements can be put aside. This is what will really make a difference." To the world. I'm going to look at how, because this is Disappearance Day, how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati wound up his pastimes. So there were some hints of his departure in the years leading up to it. He started talking about the inevitability of his passing away, and he started saying things like, the residual portion of my life, this last stage of my life, or saying, I don't have much time left. I do not know how much longer Krishna will keep me here. So even around 1930, which was actually 6 or 7 years before, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati told the devotees taking prasadam in one mat That the sun is about to set. You won't get delicious Mahaprasad like this in the future. Such a function will no longer be held. And also, one reason, actually Srila Prabhupada said, one reason, Srila Prabhupada, was that he actually became somewhat disappointed in his disciples. And he would comment on their proclivity for eating and sleeping and their having no inspiration for broadcasting the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He lamented that despite having so many disciples, most of them were Kanishtha Adhikaris, fit for Archana but not for preaching. On seeing that the number of his neophyte disciples was swelling, he decided to depart. And Srila Prabhupada wrote, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada wrote, in the latter days of my Guru Maharaj, he was very disgusted. Actually, he left this world earlier. Otherwise, he would have continued to live for more years. And there was actually some there was some infighting already before he left, and between two different parties within the Gaudiya Math. And so this is what was disappointing him. So in February 1936, Vyasa Puja of Srila Saraswati Thakur was celebrated over 5 days at Sri Vasangan, where Nityananda Prabhu had performed Vyasa Puja for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. After that, Srila Saraswati Thakur traveled to Calcutta, then to Puri, Alalanath, Dhaka, Kurukshetra, Darjeeling, Mathura, and Vrindavan. During this period, he endured a heart complaint that gradually made him weaker and weaker, but his preaching spirit flourished unabated. So even though he was becoming sick and weaker, he just carried on preaching without any break. And in several lectures delivered in 1936, so this was in the last year of his life, he stressed the need to follow the example of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Anchalila, final pastimes, by concentrating on the main purpose of life, absorption in remembering Krishna, and avoiding asatsanga, association with non-devotees. So let me just get to the... So that his disappearance. The next morning, so basically he delivered a final... the previous evening, he delivered a final message. All of you present and absent, accept my blessings. Remember that our sole duty and dharma is to propagate service to the Lord and his devotees. The next morning, 1st of January 1937, at just about 5:20, Pranavananda Brahmachari's bedside vigil was completed because he'd been actually bedridden for some time, maybe a week or two, 10 days. Pranavananda Brahmachari was handing over the fan and oxygen funnel to Krishnananda Brahmachari when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati aroused and whispered, "Who is there?" "It's me, Pranavananda Prabhupada." Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati uttered, "Oh, Pranavananda Prabhu." Pranavananda then asked, "How are you feeling, Prabhupada?" Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati murmured, oh, Krishna, Krishna." Hardly had Pranavananda left the room when he was called back by Krishnananda Prabhu. "Pranava, come quickly, it's over." Thus, after 62 years and 10 months of manifesting unflinching devotion to Sri Sri Radha Krishna in this world, Sri Vashabhanavi Daitya Das rejoined them in the hour of their Nishanta Lila, pre-dawn pastimes, of their eternal cycle of daily activities in Vraja. At the hour after their nocturnal sports, when they rest in intertwined embrace, becoming as one body and hence giving an indication of Lord Garanga's appearance. It was 5:30. All the clocks in the mat stopped simultaneously, their steady ticking soon replaced by wailing and crying from every corner. Some devotees were sobbing as if their hearts would break. Some were chanting feverishly with eyes flooded with tears. Some swooned, some simply bowed their heads and chanted Harinam, and some were clapping their foreheads and repeatedly calling out, "O Prabhupada, O Prabhupada." Although the sun had just risen, to the disciples present, everything seemed black. So then they made the arrangements for his samadhi, which many of you may have visited in Mayapur. Excuse me. So Srila Prabhupada, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, summarized the divine passing of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He said, "Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur came in this world to execute the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he executed it, and when it was required, he left this place and went to another place to do the same business." Excuse me. So, I'm not sure what time are we supposed to finish now. It's like, there's no breakfast, but there may be cleaning for... Sorry? What, now? Is it now or later? It's not. Okay, so we have to finish then in that case. All right. Anyway, there's so much more that could be said. there's a whole... Anyway, if you really want, you can either read this book. I don't know if it's... This is from the men's ashram, this copy of Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav. I don't know if there's one in the library, another copy. Is there? Maybe. There isn't. There's one, yeah. Otherwise, you can look online. There's so much about his life on Vaishnav calendar. You'll see there quite a long description of his life and teachings. So we can meditate on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and pray for his blessings, that we can actually be to have his blessings, to be able to, at least to some small degree, follow in his footsteps and preach the message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to benefit the whole world and uplift the world from its materialistic position that it's in currently. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Nitai Gaura Premanande. Hari Hari Bol.